Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Synapse, Think Tank of the Air, featuring influencers, creatives, and thought leaders in the Twin Cities. And now, here is our host, Steve LeBall.
And welcome to another edition of Synapse Think Tank of the Air. I'm your host, Steve LeBeau. And we have two of our three guests are here. But that's to be expected. We're talking about musicians.
I beg your pardon.
And musicians, they're not even always awake at this time of day. So I think we're doing pretty well. Actually, we have two guests to start out with, and one of whom I've known for a long, long time, Mick Labriola. How you doing, Mick?
Hey, I'm good. Thank you, Steve, for having me on today.
And you used to be on my old program, Java Jive, back on KFAI, like 30, 40 years ago.
Well, how is that how old it was? Oh, my gosh. Wow. Time flies, huh?
Do you remember the 80s, or have you been living too...
Well, you know, there was that big cloud of smoke that was circling the Riverside Cafe and the 400 Bar. So
okay.
I was in between there somewhere.
Okay. Well, good. You emerged. You made it into the 21st century.
I'm still in a cloud, but I'm making my way.
Okay, I think I'm getting kind of a contact cloud.
Are you? Oh, yeah. Thank you.
And then here we have a much younger gentleman, but actually, Julian Manzara. My wife and I went to see you on her birthday at the Black Dog Cafe. You may remember that.
Absolutely, I do, yeah.
So, and I was just so... Well, one thing, we were looking for jazz, and so you fit the bill there. But then I was so amazed because you also wrote songs, and that's one of the amazing things that, you know, I'm kind of a frustrated musician. You know, I've been able to pick out tunes on a piano or violin or whatever. Uh-huh. But whenever I get two notes that sound familiar, I think of a song that I already know.
Right.
How can you come up with something new?
Yeah, right.
That does happen, and sometimes you just have to play that tune, but... You know, I like to just follow my imagination and take it wherever it leads me.
Imagination?
Absolutely.
See, there's the magic word. Do you know about that, Mick?
Oh, yeah. We don't want to lose that. I mean, that's something we got to teach the WH pretty soon.
The WH.
Yeah. Let's be imaginative. Wouldn't that be something?
Wow.
Anyway, here we are.
So Mick, yep. I've known you as a percussionist, and I've seen you perform in different venues, but you're like a chameleon. You can play any kind of genre, right?
Bula, 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 bula. Well, not exactly. I've limited to about 20 of them. No, I don't
20?
Know what it is, but...
Well, I was thinking, you know, I've seen you reggae. And kind of...
roots.
Yeah, that's...
Middle Eastern stuff.
Yeah, Arabic and Turkish music.
And then I'm thinking, gosh, have I ever seen Mick at Orchestra Hall?
Well, I was only there.
Maybe behind the curtain?
Yeah, I'm the guy who likes the audience likes to hear the music as long as I'm behind the curtain. Where's that coming from? No, I was only there once, I think, with the Ethnic Dance Theater.
Oh, okay.
And we were probably doing some Bulgarian, Macedonian thing in 7 or 11, and I was there with one of the original versions of the Maroons, and we did some Caribbean music, and I brought out my steel pan, and the orchestra played with us. I forgot what song it was.
They did?
Yes!
Wow, strings? Reggae with strings?
Yeah, it was the whole orchestra. It was Calypso, I believe, that we did.
Calypso with strings. Number. Oh, well, there I can see it.
It was so much fun. But that's it. Then they said, okay, pal, don't come back until you can read Aaron Copland's score in Symphony No. 3, because it's his birthday today. Did you know that?
I think I saw that on some website or other.
Aaron Copland. Yeah, I do a blog on my website every day. And do birthdays and world music.
Rodeo, Appalachian Spring, and Billy the Kid.
Yes, very
those
good,
are big
Steve.
Ones.
See, you do have that musician thing coming out. Still.
Well, you know, I like to know a little bit about a lot of things because I don't know too much about anything.
Well, I can relate.
But boy, I just watched the recent Hitchcock, The Man Who Knew Too Much.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that one?
Kind of vaguely. You got to refresh my memory.
Well, yeah. It was made twice.
It was.
And there's a 1930s version with Peter Lorre. And then there's a
Peter Lorre, don't tell me about him.
And there's a 1950s version with Jimmy Stewart.
Oh, really?
And who's the woman that sings Que Sera Sera? Doris Day.
Oh.
But both of them had the same plot.
Uh-huh.
And a percussionist is one of the key players in that there's an assassination set up during an orchestral performance at Albert Hall. And the idea is he's supposed to shoot off his gun when the timpani goes and the cymbals.
Oh, I remember. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, that's the moment everybody's waiting for. And so I was like, gosh, there's a part made for Mick LaBriola.
Thank you so much. But, you know, they didn't hire me for that.
Well, but that's why I was thinking maybe he's been at Orchestra Hall. Have you been there, Julian?
For a performance, but not recently.
Not on stage?
No, not on stage.
Okay, well, that's kind of what I was. I mean, I've been there, but yeah, not on stage.
Well, you know, I did do music for a musical for Theater 55 recently in September.
Oh, that's for the old people?
Yeah, people over 55. But you know what? They cheat. And they throw in a few 40-year-old people.
Gosh, those kids, they're robbing the cradle.
What's going on? But suddenly, you know, I'm kind of thrown into this production, and you can't just learn the songs because the score is too complicated. There are changes in dynamics and meter changes and all this stuff.
Like notes?
Yeah, like notes. So I had to read the score, and then I thought, oh my God, I forgot I can read music. How convenient. And I got the gig, and it was great. So it was so great to read a score for a change instead of, you know, just relying on my wits. Right?
Absolutely.
Remember that song?
Well, I know you had wits in the 80s. They survived?
Right. Yeah, no, I still have some wits when I'm working. But
good.
Anyway, so I was glad to do that, Steve. It was great.
Wow.
It was like a refresher. Right.
So now, Julian, I know you do jazz, but do you do other genres as well?
Yeah. I mean, I grew up playing blues and hard rock music, so I still love that stuff, absolutely. I get a chance to play it once in a while.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I was learning from Mick that your father is a musician?
That's true, yeah.
Is that where you picked it up?
He gave me a guitar when I was young, so.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's stuck.
It did stick, yeah.
Do you still have that guitar?
I still do, of course, absolutely.
Wow.
That's awesome. I didn't know that. Well, Julian and I had a gig with Cleo Patrick's at, what's the name of the place?
The VFW Uptown.
Uptown. Who would have ever thought we would have been playing at the VFW Uptown Minneapolis? So they've transformed it into a club and a big dance scene and blah, blah, blah. But we did a Jimi Hendrix show.
Really?
And Julian played bass, and it was amazing.
Wow.
It was one of the best shows I ever did with Cleo.
Huh.
Because he said, well, let's just say some challenges trying to find the right bass player. Because, you know, everybody likes Hendrix music, right? But when you delve into it, it's complicated. There are a lot of
You got to play with your teeth. You got to play with the guitar over your head
not the
backwards.
Bass and drummer.
oh, for drumming.
Everything has to be lit on fire. Absolutely.
Well, plus, you got to take how many hits of LSD before you start?
Oh, yeah, dozens. In fact, I'm still buzzing from it right now.
Wow.
Now, when was that? Was it last year or the year before?
That must have been at least 2 years.
2 years ago.
Well, Hendrix. You know, I saw Hendrix twice.
Oh, you did?
So I'm of that age. Once in Minneapolis and once in St. Paul.
Now, in Minneapolis, where did you see him?
It was a convention center.
Oh, okay, a big place.
It was right after Electric Ladyland came out, so he did
Electric
all those.
Ladyland, oh.
Yeah, so that was like the height.
I'm sorry, he had Mitch Mitchell and Noel Redding with him?
Yeah, it was the the experience, man.
Oh, wow.
Man.
Wow, groovy. No,
it was like the classic Hendrix. But the second time was like a year or two later in St. Paul. And he was very subdued and quiet. And it's like, and the next thing we knew, he had passed away.
Oh, my gosh. Shocking. Well, look what the
snow
blew in.
We're here. it bust. The morning alarm clock rang.
Is that what it was?
And so now we have three musicians.
Oh,
we just have an entrance here from Van Nixon, and you know I've known Mick for a long time and Julian for maybe a couple of years, but Van, who the heck are you?
How nobody knows, nobody cares. I'm going to just eat worms and die.
Oh, gosh. I hope that's a title of a song and not kind of an expression of your animus.
Nice to meet you, Steve.
Nice to meet you, Van. So I understand the full name is Van Buren Nixon.
President.
So your name, you're named after two presidents.
I don't know, my dad must have been on drugs or something. I don't know.
Well, that's kind of fitting into the topic we've had going on here, that seems to be one of the prime instigators of the imagination for a lot of music.
Well, good. It's true.
Hip, hip.
True. So, and you play guitar. I see you brought your guitar.
I thought I'd bring it just to see if we might do something and...
Okay, well, let's see. I was thinking maybe we could write a song while we're here.
Oh, that's kind of ambitious of you, Steve.
Well, I know. The thing is, I'm kind of a frustrated musician, you know. I was telling Mick that when I was a kid, I had piano lessons, and I got through the Green Book. But then football season came, and I was a lineman, so I had to go play football. Right. And then I wish I would have, you know. And now I could play piano, but I could never play football. You know what I mean? Yeah. So.
And you're a big guy.
And I'm a big guy.
What are you going to do, play football
or piano? I know. And I'd give my right arm to be able to play violin.
Well, yeah.
But the thing is we have to stay with some kind of musical thing because we're not going to have these bodies forever.
Right. Well, you're better off than dancers. I mean, their knees go and stuff like that. So, Van, tell me about yourself.
Well, as far as music is concerned, I think I've been probably playing music for about 50 years. Kind of I was a musician. I went to school for music. And
where?
I went to school. I was at Butler University in Indianapolis, Iowa. And Iowa is a place called Simpson College in Indianola, Iowa. I was basically a vocal major. I went to Iowa State.
Really?
Yeah, I was kind of a professional student doing opera. I was an opera musician.
What kind of opera do you like?
I like Italian opera. I like Puccini.
Really?
Things like that.
Hey, that's a nice. I'm
going to call you. That's a nice. Right here. Yeah.
Have you met Mick Labriola?
Yeah, I do like that kind of stuff. But, you know, being a person of color, especially at that time growing up, they it's like people think that, well, there's no such thing. But that just shows the ignorance of the world because people of color have been doing opera since opera started.
Right.
And, you know, people have to realize that. It's like playing a banjo, which I'm also trying to learn. The banjo is basically an African instrument, and people think that, only white people know how to play the banjo.
Only girl squirrels can play that thing.
So it's like, you know, it's ridiculous, people. People got to wake up.
Well, I think you're right. The amount of ignorance in the world seems to be expanding.
True that.
Hmm.
As we speak.
As we speak, yeah. Well, it's our job to do something about that. So you're a trained musician. You can read notes.
Sometimes, right?
Vocal stuff I can.
Oh, you can read vocal notes.
Yeah.
Oh, you play trombone, too?
Well, yeah, I play a little trombone.
Hey, we played in the May Day Parade this year with the community band.
Yeah, Mick dragged me into that.
Oh!
Gosh. And so, are you from Indiana?
Well, I grew up in Indiana. I was born in D.C., Washington, and Philadelphia, and then I went to high school, grade school, a little bit of grade school and high school in Indianapolis. And
so you've been moving west your whole life.
Pretty much, and I got I'm here now. This is grounded because my grandkids are here.
So oh, okay.
We go nowhere now. You know.
So those are your anchor grandkids.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
Keep you here. So how long have you been in Minnesota?
40 years.
So newcomer, huh?
Is that a newcomer?
Well,
40 years?
I don't know. Well, here's my test. How do you pronounce the main street in downtown Minneapolis?
The main street?
Yeah. You know, the one that has a mall around it?
I was going to say Meridian, but that's Indianapolis. Around the mall?
What's the name of the street?
Oh, you mean Nicolette?
Oh, Nicolette?
You mean Nicolet?
Nicolette. I know that guy.
Oh, see, yeah. That's my test.
Is it outside?
See, if you're from here,
I see what you mean. Yeah,
if you're from here, you know it's a two-syllable word, Nicolette.
Right.
But if you're not from here, you say Nicolette.
Oh.
Because there's an O in there.
Yeah.
So that's,
yeah.
If you remember the old Mary Tyler Moore show, you know, she was supposed to be based in Minneapolis.
Uh-huh.
Oh, let's go out to Nicolette.
Yeah.
Oh, that's like saying New Orleans.
Yeah, that's right.
Because if you're from there, you don't say
New Orleans.
You say
New Orleans.
Yeah. What I just learned in the impeachment hearings is that if you say Kiev, that's the Russian way of saying it. Mm. So that's kind of unpatriotic. If you're from there, if you're Ukrainian, you say Kiev.
Oh, yeah, I heard that too.
So I never knew that because they had Ambassador Taylor saying Kiev, Kiev, Kiev. And I was like, God, he lived there. He better know how to pronounce it right.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah.
And then one of the commentators on CNN said, well, you know, if you say Kiev, that means you're a Rusky or a Russophile, kind of like Trump.
Oh, Trump and Putin, those guys.
Well, we pronounce a lot of words wrong here, you know, from people, other countries.
Oh.
Especially countries in Japan or places in Japan. We say, like, Kyoto. People say Kyoto, and they pronounce it Kyoto.
Uh-huh.
You know, little things like that. I mean, Saudi Arabia, instead of Saudi Arabia, they say Saudi Arabia.
Hmm.
I know this because I know everything there is to know about the world.
And he knows a lot about pronunciation, except when it comes to English.
Musical words.
I'm glad you came here. Well, Van, do you know Julian Manzara?
Julian, I've heard a lot about you,
okay.
And I'd like to know more about you.
Well, that's very kind.
So tell us something about yourself, Julian.
Okay.
Tell us how you make music, how you compose new songs.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'll start with some broad strokes. I'm a musician, guitar player, singer, songwriter, composer. I play in an ensemble under my own name, Julian Manzara Quartet, which is actually flexible. I play as a solo musician, which is my next gig as a solo musician, up to a quartet, sometimes even a quintet. I'm with another project called Black Market Brass now, which is a funk, Afrobeat, large ensemble. Oh, yeah. So that's been a lot of fun. We were just at the Fine Line on Halloween. That was really special.
Wow. The Fiend Lean.
Yeah, as well as other various projects and duos. So.
But how do you write music?
How do I write it?
Like I say, if I hear two notes, it reminds me of another song. And then
I usually try to just clear my mind and play. It's usually with the guitar. I'll just play. Sometimes I'll try to play something I've never played before, and often I'll record it, and I'll just see where that leads me. Another way I'll do it is by writing. Sometimes I'll write out random chord progressions that I have no idea how it's going to sound, and then I'll play it back, and sometimes that'll inspire something, too.
You write it, on a computer, or?
Just by hand in a notebook.
By hand? God, how old-fashioned. Now, don't you do like Mozart?
I'm
don't you dream?
Old-fashioned.
Don't you come up with new music during a dream and then write it down when you wake up?
You know, the best music I've ever heard was in my dreams, but when I wake up, I can never remember it.
Wow. Good dreams. Dreams and soundtracks.
Tape recorder. Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, all musicians, we've got music in our head.
Yeah, right? All the time.
All the time. At the most unopportune time sometimes. You know, it's just going and rolling.
Yeah.
And it seemed like even I would pick up on a radio station like KFAI. I'd be at home fixing dinner, and there goes KFAI. It's not even on. It's in my head.
Mm.
So how do you explain that, Steve?
Well, I think we've talked about some of your psychic history, and there's a lot to be explained there.
I see.
But
it has a lot to do with it.
Well, I remember hearing a story that Duke Ellington, once somebody got out of a taxi and started walking, and it was like tap, 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 and that jogged his imagination for a song. Yeah. Do you write music, Van?
I do write music. Probably not as well as Julian. Like I was just going to say, you know, when you're thinking about a song, or you wake up in the morning, you have that song. I always think the best thing to do is like to have a, well, okay, this is old school. Well, I have a cassette. Mm-hmm. You know,
a what?
A cassette? Yeah, you know. The,
well, he has a pencil. Cassette.
Well, yeah, that's pretty old school. But you know, I try to think of it, and I'll run downstairs and try to record it, try to get at least the main theme, and I try to write songs that way. But sometimes you just, you know, you got so much going through your head, and you just don't.
Now you can use your phone, and it's got the memo recording.
All right.
And I've been using that, but
I don't have that.
You don't have a memo recording deal on your phone?
Well, you know what? I've got a special this week on my iPhone, and I'm going
to
give you.
He's got a second one in his pocket.
So Mick, did you ever go to music school?
You know, I did. I went to a bunch of them.
Really?
Did you get kicked
out of?
Well, sort of. Believe it or not, I went to the American Conservatory of Music in Chicago.
Holy cow.
On Michigan Avenue.
Gosh. Yeah. You have to shower before you go in there.
Well, you know what? It's defunct now. Oh. I don't know what I did.
Uh-oh.
But
you learned a lot there, though.
I did. Because I came into a music conservatory not having any background.
How did you get in?
Well, I had to audition. And James Dutton, who was the head of the percussion department, was very impressed with me, but he said, yeah, you're one of these guys that have a natural feel for really? Many different kinds of things, but now we're going to tell you what you're really doing and what you're not doing.
Wow.
So the first thing was start to read music. And I thought, oh, okay, I'll try it. And I'm telling you, I had to work at it every day, you guys, you know, because I had sight reading, mm-hmm. you know, vocal yeah. sight reading, piano, harmony, and then I was a percussion major and a guitar minor. So I had two guitar teachers, and suddenly I'm rehearsing 6 hours a day.
Gosh.
The first year. Yeah. I mean, you know, during yeah. the week, if I could. But it was, oh my God. So time consuming. And look at me now.
Wow, look at me now. You're listening to Synapse Think Tank of the Air, and boy, we got three varied musicians. Mick Labriola, who actually went to a conservatory.
Thank you very much.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. And then also trained in opera, Van Nixon.
No, I smoked too many cigars. Thank you very much.
Wow. And then, I don't know if you've been polluted yet, Julian Manzara, probably the youngest member here.
Polluted by the education system?
No, polluted by cigars and old people.
Oh, I can't quite get away from it, but, you know.
So anyway, I'm Steve LeBeau. We'll be back right after this.
Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. We'll be back in a moment.
Okay, welcome back. This is Synapse Think Tank of the Air, the second segment. And boy, we have a bunch of live wires on today. We have three musicians that are musicating left and right. We have Mick Labriola, who I heard is from Chicago.
Chicago.
Trained in all kinds of stuff. But basically, I've known you as a percussionist.
Right, but you know, I used to get training on the monkey bars when I was a little kid. And some things don't change, do they?
I guess not.
Okay.
And then we have a Van Buren Nixon, named after all these presidents, and he's going to be tuning up his guitar. He trained in opera. What's your favorite opera?
I think my favorite opera would be La Boheme.
Wow.
Yeah.
Gosh.
And my favorite aria, since you ask, I'll say it anyway, is Cegheri da Manina.
Wow. You can pronounce anything. So are you going to warm up your voice or tune your guitar or something?
How about if I tune my guitar? Because if I warmed up with my voice, if anybody out there is listening or knows opera, they'll say, no, get him off. don't do that. So I'll just tune up my guitar.
Okay. And we're here with Julian Manzara, who's a jazz musician, but he does a lot of a wide variety of things, starting with the blues.
Absolutely.
Now, do kids listen to blues? Now, I don't mean to call you a kid, but do young people, I guess I just did, though. Do young people listen to blues anymore, or is that...
They listen to things that are on the periphery of blues, like Eric Clapton is blues, Jimi Hendrix, Led Zeppelin, that kind of stuff. All the music that is in that area stemmed from the blues, so yeah.
Boy, I saw all those guys at a rock festival pre-Woodstock in Wisconsin.
Were they all there?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, Hendrix wasn't there.
Yeah.
But they had, what was the group after Cream? Blind Faith.
Oh, that was a
so
great group.
So Blind Faith was there. So Eric Clapton was there. And then Led Zeppelin was there.
Uh-huh. Wow.
So anyway, they had a lot of
heavyweights.
Everybody but Hendrix. So anyway, talking about music, now, Julian, did you ever study formally any of this stuff? Did you go to a conservatory too?
I did. Well, I was self-taught for a long time, but my first...
Who taught you when you were self-taught?
That would be me.
Oh.
Gosh. I think that's how that works. But I started college at Berklee College of Music in Boston, Massachusetts.
Wow.
Swiftly, after about a year, got distracted and went on tour with a rock band. But I really did enjoy my time at Berklee and learned a lot there in that 1 year. After that, I finished at McNally Smith and got my degree. So.
Which is in was in St. Paul?
Was in St. Paul, yeah.
Gosh, music, it comes and goes. So now, do all of you actively perform in and around the Twin Cities?
Yes.
Yeah. Only when I get a gig.
Oh, okay. So
well,
there's
the
big
part.
Gift. So that was one of my questions is, how are the gigs going these days? I mean, talking with Mick a little bit about jazz, it seems like there used to be more jazz venues than there are today.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember seeing one of your emails, Julian, about, I'm not sure if I read it correctly, but it was as if you were performing in somebody's house.
I have put on concerts at my own house, actually. Oh, just one, actually. Okay. But that's becoming more and more common, and people are actually making an entire living traveling and just playing in people's living room now.
Wow.
There are a lot of pros to that. I don't think it's actually a new thing.
No, it's not.
I'd have to
the old rent party, right?
Well, I don't know where it started, but yeah, I heard about it. I remember hearing about it. 20, 30 years ago, when we thought, what?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Probably in the folk tradition.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. When it started. Yeah.
Maybe in Europe and other places around the world, it's more common, or used to be. I don't know. But I have heard of that more recently in the Twin Cities, even. And I thought, well, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
You know, having musicians come into your home or even you. And yeah, my wife and I do that every once in a while. We put on a show and have musicians come in. And you know, it's one of those potluck things, and everybody gets a song or two, the musicians that are there. So it's more like a let's all listen to what we have.
Oh.
And it's a 1 day thing, and it's a fun gig.
But is it a gig in which you can make a living?
Well, for what we do, no. It's more of a fun thing, you know, to discover other talents. We had one young man, you might have even heard of him around town, come in who we pretty much discovered. He plays Gajong. What's his name?
Gajong. And that's a type of poker?
Jarrell Barton. No, Gajong is an instrument, Chinese instrument. It's kind of like a zither, but it sounds like a harp.
But kind of a haunting sound.
Yeah, but it's beautiful haunting sound.
Wow.
And he plays it, taught himself how to play it. He taught himself Mandarin. He's a young African-American. So he shocks a lot of people with this kind of a thing. Darrell Barton, he's things like that. People like that we kind of have and sit in our house and play, and we just, you know, we're amazed by these musicians. Mm. Amazed by these dudes.
That is amazing. So are there...
And women.
Are these musicians... including yourselves, able to make a living in this town as musicians?
That's a really good question.
I'm going to
you guys answer that. I was a truck driver for too long.
Well, yeah.
I had breakfast this morning.
He's sustaining himself.
You have breakfast?
Wow. On your music job?
Yeah.
Yeah, no. No, there's a community of full-time artists here who are musicians.
There are.
But, well, I know the Twin Cities is strong in terms of the number of actors per capita and dancers, and I've never heard about musicians per capita.
You haven't? Well, let us see. We have three
musicians per capita in this room.
Down,
what?
But, oh yeah, for this room, I think we're looking pretty good. But yeah. I haven't looked at the statistics, but I'd say we're doing pretty well, and our music scene is pretty flourishing these days.
However, I think from my perspective, I think the crowds that go out to see music has diminished significantly since I was a kid, because back in the day, if you wanted to hear the band, you went out and saw them on the weekend. Well, that's changed significantly now, right?
We have YouTube, Julia? And Spotify.
What's that?
We have YouTube now.
Precisely.
We have Spotify.
Yep.
We have iTunes, etc.
There's so many online things.
That started happening when they invented radio. Well, no, everybody used to have a parlor piano.
Yeah.
And the thing would be to sit around and sing, when people came over. And then when the radio is, it's like, geez, Frank Sinatra sounds better than my, cousin John.
Right.
You shut up. We're going to turn on the radio.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, now that's turned into, I don't know who's in. Are you into electronic music, Julian?
Not necessarily.
So you play because you play instruments.
Yeah.
But there are so many.
Imagine that.
Yeah, no, I know.
Play an instrument.
There are so many, and I'm quoting this, musicians out there that, all they know is electronics. I got nothing against rap.
But you mean like with keyboards?
Well, no.
Drum machines.
Not only drum machines, but electronics. I gotta lay a beat down, man. Okay, lay a beat down, but can you play this bass? Can you play this piano? Can you play that violin?
Did you learn an instrument?
And they'll call themselves musicians. That's all well and fine, but so a musician to me is somebody who has actually can do something with that thing that they pick up, that an inanimate object that you can play with and do something with, not just hear something in your head and make some words up.
Well, it's another art form,
I know it's another art form,
using electronics.
And I think it is.
Really
it's an art form, but
it is.
But the real art is escaping. What are kids going to listen to in 50 years from now when they're 50 and 60 years old?
Wow.
Well, I was in India, what was it? It was a number of years ago, maybe 7, 8 years ago, and I studied tabla, and it's like, they said, Meek, you're just doing the baby step. It's okay, but it'll take you a long time.
And I thought, yeah, but you did it, though.
Well, I did some, but what was happening there is I was attending a tabla school, and the ages were maybe from 15 years old to about 25. And they had a core group of performers that were astounding because they had been playing all their life. But the people at large out there in India were not interested in the traditional art forms.
Well, yeah.
They like Bollywood, right?
Yeah.
So that was the focus there or the excitement. And here we've got new electronic media that really has become predominant. In a lot of ways in the music industry, I believe. So I'm with Van. I don't fit into that category, We're like analog people. We play the instruments and
an analog person.
We're old. Analog
but Julian's,
is old.
And Julian's doing the same thing, which is wonderful. It's learning the art form.
Do you mind if I ask your age?
I'm 25.
You're old.
Holy cow. Well, so you're like so you're not even a millennial. Are you a Gen Z?
He's a Gen X, aren't you?
I haven't looked into specific
numbers, millennial.
But I think I'm a millennial.
Yeah, he's a millennial.
Because they have that new thing, the Z. X's, they're old. It goes boomers, X, millennial, and Z.
I never pay attention. But
I haven't looked.
Oh, so you're 25?
I am.
Yeah. Okay, my daughter's 25. She's a millennial. Therefore, you're a millennial.
Perfect.
It's kind of a logical
it's a correlation.
Yeah.
And I think I probably met you the first time. Over 10 years ago.
Absolutely.
He was just a kid.
Well, he was 15. Well, see that math? Those math?
Pretty good. Well, you're sharp there, Steve-O. Oh, my gosh.
I don't know.
I think it was even longer. And he was just a kid, and it was amazing to see how he's flourished and done so well. And it's amazing. It's just, it's very inspiring, Julian. So thank you. It's awesome to see people picking up the baton and keeping it going because it's so important.
Yeah.
Right?
And the thing is, to make a living doing music, and I suspect this is true of you, Mick, is that you're not only a musician, you're like a business person. You're like a producer. Yeah. You have to arrange things. Mm-hmm. And is it true? Have you put groups together? Have you led groups?
No, yeah.
Are you, you're the guy that's the adult in the room?
Well, sort of. Now, I don't know. We're all kind of scrambling, but...
I should put scare quotes on that.
Yeah, right.
Well, yeah, the days of the gig, you know, the people calling you for the job, forget it. It just doesn't happen like that. You have to go out and put it together, whatever it is. It's not going to come to you anymore. And if it did at one time, you were lucky. But nowadays, we've got to be motivated. Get out there and you know, explore what our possibilities are and make it happen. Because it's just not going to, nobody's going to, you know, email you with that gig. They might, which is great. But, I mean, really, you have to be ambitious these days and get out there.
And, you know, a lot of times things like, what do they call them? Well, the emails, the Facebooks.
I've heard of email.
Yeah. And what's that other thing that you put your stuff on?
The cell phone?
Twitter?
Well, no, like where you have a web page.
Oh,
web pages.
Hey, you know, I've got my own website now, man.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, you know, people still look at that a web page. You know?
Well, that's true. It's,
I think.
It's like it replaces the yellow pages to show that you exist.
Yeah.
It used to be you had to have man. It's not just yellow.
You got
to
have it.
You have to have a website.
Right.
Because sometimes when I go look for gigs and they say, well, yeah, I play this, play it. Here's my card. They look at the card and look at you and look at the card. And, you know, you can just tell they just want to tear it up and throw it away. They don't want to see a stupid card. You know, like, do you have a web page? That's the questions that they ask. Uh-huh. What do you have that I can see online? Okay.
And so, you've got a new site now.
I have a new site.
Kathy told me all about it.
Yeah.
Okay, what's your site address?
I don't know if anybody wants to see it, but I'll tell you anyway.
Boy, you're a real promoter, you know that?
Yeah, that's why she's doing it. www.vannixonmusic.com.
Okay. Well, it's good you got your name in there, so it's a good identity, right?
And then mine is just simply myname.com, which is micklabriola.com. Stay tuned, folks, and check out my blog every day.
Labriola, thank you, folks.
I sound like Steve, right?
Have you done radio?
Yeah. Well, radio's done me, I think. Yeah. But I don't know.
So now, given your millennialness, are you more adept at using social media to try to get gigs, Julian?
You know, I try to spread it out as thinly as I can, which means using business cards, using social media, and my own website. So there you go.
Does what works?
Well, I find that the card is really nice because people can actually hang on to it and they remember you until the next day.
That's what I did. I got your card when I met you.
Yeah.
Things move so fast that you can hardly remember what you did yesterday. And if you have that card sitting on your desk, you might remember to go to the website. So that's kind of the way I've been working.
Give me one of your cards, brother.
I will. They're in my wallet. I'll give you one after the show.
See, there's a thing. You put your website address on your card.
Oh,
it's like mixed media.
Well, Yeah. You have to do that. You have to put that on the card.
You have to use all of the above and then more.
Wow.
And
now,
then you still won't call.
Now, you guys went to all these conservatories left and right, and do you still have to practice every day like some of the violinists I hear about?
Oh, definitely. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, yeah. I mean, if I don't practice, and I try to do it around the house, if I don't practice, I feel like crap. You know, and you can't go to a gig and be so unrehearsed. Or you think that you know it all at that gig that's probably only going to last a half an hour, because all you're going to end up doing is screwing up. Screw up your brain, screw up your style, screw up your feel, and then you're going to leave feeling really bad.
So even after years and years and years, you have to to keep it going? To limber your fingers up, or to limber your brain up, or
both.
What?
Absolutely.
Both?
Exactly.
Everything.
Yeah, everything.
Everything.
Especially my fingers. I mean, like I had this gig one time. I was playing downtown. It was one of those Lake Street things. And I was playing. Thank God it was moving towards the end of the time. I think I'd played like 2 or 3 hours, and I didn't take my aspirin, as old people should do.
Uh-oh.
And I wasn't drinking.
So you had a heart attack?
No, I felt like it. I wasn't drinking a lot of water, and my left hand, because I play guitar, my left hand went.
No.
And it just kind of, and I was thinking, am I having a thing here?
God.
First time it's ever happened in my life, and it kind of freaked me out.
That's
I won't say the rest of my words. It freaked me out. So I think, you know, I didn't limber myself. I didn't practice. I didn't push the practice. I just went out there and went, okay, it's a nice hot summer day. I'm going to do this. But it scared the heck out of me. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't going to say heck, but that's okay.
Yeah, it was pretty harsh. Yes. Well, you know, we're coming up to our break time. Do you want to maybe perform something here? An original piece, because we don't have any copyright.
No problem.
Ben? Well, they got to pay me.
Okay.
And the check's in the mail, man.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I am.
Send your checks to www.vannixonmusic.com.
JulianManzara.com, and we'll take care of processing that right away.
Okay. Okay, is this an original piece?
This is an original piece.
Okay.
It's called Cover Up.
Cover Up.
Cover Up.
Oh, are you
okay,
kidding? I played bass on it, man. Remember?
That's right. Yeah, yeah. Mick played bass on this. This is like, I don't know how many years ago we did this.
Okay.
I'll
this
do a little
89,
thing
I think.
Of it.
Yeah. Cover Up. Is this
it's
an honor
YouTube
of...
It's on YouTube now, man. I put that stuff on YouTube.
Oh.
Over at,
Cover Up. Is this an honor of your namesake, Nixon?
No.
Oh, yeah.
No, it's in honor of Trump. No, it's in...
Oh, Trump.
This is a song that basically has to do with life in general, and you know, be yourself, be real, because if you don't just loosen up, things will be weird, and you'll weird out.
Okay.
And sometimes what you're thinking is that that life can be. You put me on the spot here, so I can't really.
Well, that's right. You're on the spot here,
Van. Yeah, I'm on the spot. It's about relaxing and not letting
not
negativity take over.
So okay, so the cover up. So I had a different sense of it. And yeah. And Mick, what kind of percussion instrument do you have there?
I was searching the world over, and I finally found plastic on plastic.
Oh yeah.
This is just an American Remo kind of djembe thing.
What's it called?
No, it's a djembe.
A djembe.
It's not a real djembe. It's a Sears djembe.
Okay.
And then the musicians will know what I'm talking about.
Okay. A plastic. Okay. And so here we are. And does this duo have a name? Or is this the Van Nixon duo?
It's just Van and Mick.
Van and Mick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see.
We've been probably playing for about 30, 35 years.
Yeah. Our first
group, about that?
Our first group was Macumba.
Yeah. Right?
Macumba.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not sure you're on mic now, Mick. I'm not sure the mic is picking.
Oh, really?
Well, I mean,
oh, like this.
It'll pick up the drum, but I mean, when you're talking about Macumba.
How about if I talk like that?
Okay. Well, then we'll have to get you out of here.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, everybody, can you hear that okay? Mm-hmm. Well, you always lead me around that corners. Stop the beat.
just a show. It's just a show.
Okay, Julia, woo! We're the audience. We got a
yay of a version of it, but that's it.
Kind of a funky version.
Very nice.
Bannon and Mick doing the cover up. So life is a cover up. Boy, it reminds me of a book about called the Spectacle that. They create these spectacles just to kind of distract you from what's important.
Kind of like what's going on right now in our political season.
Gosh.
This whole thing of what's going on.
It's kind of an extension of a Halloween season.
Yeah, pretty much.
See, I thought it was Ilya Kuryakin. You remember him?
Oh, yeah, from
Man from Uncle.
Man from Uncle.
Man from Uncle.
Napoleon Solo's sidekick, yeah. The Russian guy.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Julian's going.
Have you ever used the phrase, okay, boomer?
Not yet.
Okay, this might be a good opportunity.
I don't remember that.
Okay, boomer. Well, it's kind of a thing now.
The younger folks are...
It's a dismissive phrase from one generation to the next.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
I haven't found proper, appropriate opportunity to use.
Because who said it recently? It was a young gal in...
Okay, boomer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was...
I think it was in a court situation.
Was
I
can't court, remember. Yeah. Maybe in D.C.
Well, I still say things like, okay, all right, yeah, it's good to see you. I go, ditto. And a lot of people don't know what I'm talking about when I say that. You know, ditto.
Really?
Or ditto? You know what ditto is?
Yeah,
sure.
Okay. A lot of people don't know what ditto is.
Well, they probably don't know what carbon paper is either.
Well, yeah.
Or a Xerox machine.
Yeah, I know. Well, I was using, working on a magazine and talking with a couple of my editor and designer, and I said, well, you know, we just finished up the magazine. And I said, well, another silk purse. And they looked at me like, what the heck are you talking about? And like, you know, you make a silk purse out of a sow's ear.
Right.
You know, you take something that was terrible and you make it mm-hmm. nice. Mm-hmm. And they just looked at me like I was nuts.
No comprendo, señor.
If they had invented the phrase "Okay, Boomer," they would have used it then.
Yeah.
This is pre-Okay Boomer.
Well, then again, you know, if we can't take a joke, then what's wrong, right?
That's right.
Yeah, you were going to say something else, weren't you?
I was, but how did you know that?
Because it's a bad word.
Oh, no, I wasn't going to say a bad word. I would never do that. Not on radio with Steve LeBeau. My goodness.
So now... Do you guys also enjoy going out to see other people make music?
Absolutely.
I think so. Yeah.
Is it tough? Do you want to jump up on the stage and say, hey, you know, let me jam with you? Do they use the word jam anymore?
Not really.
No, yeah,
I don't like doing that. Do you?
Use the word jam?
No, jam session. Like, want to jump up on the stage.
Oh, it depends on the context. Usually not, but if the moment is right and it's somebody that you know, certain situations, it can work.
And you work the song with them and it's like, yeah, okay, I feel like doing this.
Yeah.
I don't like doing that because I kind of feel like if I'm not gigging a lot and someone says, well, come on, I'm good, get on the stage. And I kind of feel like, I feel so sorry for me that I think I will get up on the stage and I want other people to see me and see that I'm still doing music. I just don't like it.
Well, you know, that brings up another topic that Dan and I have experienced. And that is we might be working in a club and here come, let's say a few individuals who they're going to want to jump up on our stage.
Oh,
right?
So interlopers.
Huh?
Interlopers.
Kind of. It feels like that.
Wow.
It's something I wouldn't do. But
I wouldn't do that.
Anyway, so there's a lot of mixed dynamics.
So it goes both ways, huh? So,
well,
yeah.
Gosh.
I mean, the other night, and I can say my wife and I, we were in Manhattan, and we were at this, we were listening, to, we went to this restaurant. It's a small restaurant. The guy was doing just a single leg guitar. Really nice sound, and it's just him and his guitar, and I'm thinking, well, hey, I do that kind of stuff, but it was really nice listening to him, and you know, it's kind of like some people, I think, were feeling like, okay, are you going to go up there and are you going to get on stage too? Because, you know, it seems like you know some of the harmony with those songs, so maybe you should. No, I don't want to do that. This is his show. You know, it's like, yeah. I'm not going to do that. I don't know the guy.
I think, you know, like when Van and I were young, when we were kids, you used to see more of that, but it was different.
It was different.
It was a lot more fun. I don't know. That's what I experienced. I mean, people would just, they would invite you up and you would do it. It's getting parking concerns.
Oh, okay.
That's what we're discussing up
we're
here.
We're here on Synapse Think Tank of the Air with Mick Labriola on drums, Van Nixon on vocals and guitar, and Julian Manzara, who's on his watch right now.
I'm just laying out and enjoying the show.
Well, thank you, Steve, for not calling my drum bongos.
Oh, bongos?
Because Americans, they see a hand drum.
It's just one bongo.
Right.
Bring your bongo back anytime.
Yeah, but they say that. They say, oh, God, I really like your bongos. I said, well,
guess, a nice sound.
Guess what, though? I didn't bring my bongos. I brought my djembe.
And you're a drummer, so, you know, give these drums the proper name.
That's right.
That's right. Don't call my djembe bongos because it will get quite offended, and it might take you to a litigation process in downtown.
Bedtime for bongos.
Huh?
Bedtime for bongos.
Remember Maynard G. Krebs?
Right. Come the beatnik days.
Yeah.
So I was going to say... going way back to my earlier youth, about the time I met you, I was at First Avenue and Stanley Clarke was performing.
Oh,
Stanley
my goodness.
And he invited any bass players in the audience to come and take a few licks.
What?
You know, and there was like dozens of them came up there. It's like, you know, it was like the bass center of the universe.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And they all, it was kind of fun.
Yeah, it sounds
fantastic. And a great fun for them.
You see, that kind of a thing is different. It's like, come on up and, you know, bring your axe and play something.
Hmm.
That's different than just saying, can I sit in?
Hmm.
You know?
I have another question for you guys. In the world of creating art, and that can go anything from writing to music, dance, everything, there's this tension between playing what you want to play to get it out of your soul versus trying to come up with something that will please an audience. And, you know, wanting to do something popular. I mean, at least in the old Top 40 music days, where this group would get a hit record, and then they do the exact same song, more or less, and try to get a second record. And so instead of listening to their inter-creative soul, they were just trying to cater to the audience. Do you guys have to struggle with that at all?
You know, I think I did more when I do a single act. Sometimes I feel like I have to do that more because you're the only one there, and you want people to at least keep you, or keep you there.
Okay, wait a second. Are you going to take off, Julian?
Yeah, I really have to. Remember.
Okay, why don't you go on your microphone and tell us what you have some gigs coming up that you want people to know.
Signing off. This is Julian Manzara. Tomorrow, that's Friday, November 15th. We're going to be at Pimento presenting Lineage Black Music Series with my friends Seberg and the Black Velvet Punks. Also, the wonderful jazz vocalist Sarah M. Greer is going to be there. And then next week on Wednesday, I'm going to be doing a solo show at the Warming House, which is right on Bryant Avenue in Minneapolis. So come check that out. That's on Wednesday the 20th.
For future dates, it's
JulianManzara.com. That's Manzara. Thank you very much.
Okay, well, thanks for joining us. And nice to see you again, Julian.
So wonderful to see you, Steve. Thanks
for
having me.
Okay, well, we'll have to do this again sometime. We'll have to jam again like this.
All right.
And Mick, are you taking off too?
Well, soon.
Okay.
We're under the parking restrictions of Hennepin County.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
Well.
Hey, good to see you.
Nice to meet you.
Really it's the only good thing we're not in Ramsey.
I think, you know, you were talking about do you want to please the audience? And a lot of us learned early on, if we're happy with it, that then the audience is going to be happy.
Hmm.
You know, we've got to be captivated by our own creations or our own whatever we're doing.
And if we're happy, the audience is probably going to be really happy with it.
Yeah. You know, a lot of times, especially with a group. But like I was talking about before, when I want to do something and I'm right on it and I'm feeling like, okay, this should be, this volume level should be here and this song should sound like this. And then if you got people like, you know, there are some people that kind of go, well, that's just too loud. What are you talking about? This is a guitar and a voice. Now, how the hell can that be too loud? Get out of my face.
Oh!
I'm polite.
He is.
Well, I've seen things in a small, intimate audience where the guy's got an amplifier blowing everybody away, and right. It's like, you know, yeah, put that you away. That. You know, we're right here.
Yeah. No, I'm more sensitive to what's going on in the audience. Because if I was not sensitive to what's going on in the audience, I wouldn't be there. They wouldn't want me there.
Well, that's kind of our job, too. Mm-hmm. We've got to be acutely aware of, are we making noise? Is it too loud? Right. Is it too soft? Can everybody hear? Whatever it is. So that's sort of like the logistics of it, right?
Wow.
But if you're not aware of it, you could get in trouble. And we've all been there and done that.
Boy, back in those days, too, I went to one venue and saw UB40.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And they were yelling at the audience for not dancing.
You guys gotta be dancing.
Yeah.
No,
this was in South Minneapolis somewhere.
Okay.
I forget the name of the place. But you should be dancing. This is dance music. Don't just stand there and listen to us.
Well, you know, those Swedes and Norwegians, they're kind of reserved once in a while over there.
I just want to look.
Yeah. I just want to look. Oh, my gosh.
Can I watch?
Oh, hey, listen. Are we going to have to monitor this show?
That's right. But, I mean, have you been hired for a dance and people don't dance?
Yeah. Well, I'm afraid that we've entered that arena now where people just aren't as engaged as they used to be. And the product that the musician or artist is offering, it better be good. It better be more than just kind of average. Nowadays, I mean, you've got to up the level.
Yeah,
otherwise, no one's going to pay attention. Hmm. So people are more apt nowadays not to dance than they used to be.
Wow.
In the old days, they couldn't wait to dance to your band or whatever, right?
That's strange.
Well, and that's here, too. Like, if you went down to Tijuana and started playing, you know, those people are going to start jumping right there, right? Mm-hmm. Right at the place, at the very beginning.
So are you saying it might be a cultural phenomenon as well?
I am. I don't want to step on anybody's toes or nothing, you know what I'm saying?
Speaking of culture, we're running out of time now, so I have one last question. And, you know, given my age, you know, I've never kind of gotten attuned to rap, rap music. But it's everywhere now. I mean, the kids are raised on it. It's normal for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I once interviewed James Moody.
Okay.
And I couldn't play it because of the words he used to describe what he feels about rap. He used expletives.
Yeah.
So have you guys ventured into that form of music?
Yeah, I like listening to rap. I don't like listening to misogynistic rap. I don't like listening to negative rap. I don't like listening to the rap where it's, you know, I'm talking about my Glock 9, I'm going to blow you in, get into the expletives and all that. I hear it. I listen to it. It's got good beat, good sound, but I don't get into it. There's Christian rap out there that sounds almost like it, and people go, well, I can't understand what they're saying. Well, you're not listening to what they're saying. You know, but there's some Christian rap that sounds just like some of the negative rap sometimes, and you really have to listen to it to understand whether you like it or not, to see if you like it or not. But most rap, it doesn't bother me. I listen to it. I like the beat. It still has a groove.
And it's people's culture. It's their perspective of things. You know, I mean, so you kind of, if you live in that world.
It's the hip-hop.
Then, you know.
Right. That's that world.
It's a lifestyle.
Exactly right.
It's a lifestyle. I mean, I am still old school. I know we've used that term a lot, but I like spoken word. And I used to like the, I can't think of some of the spoken worders, like Gil Scott-Heron.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so that's where my mind goes. And I still work with a group,
local
even though we don't.
Alamayu.
Huh? Yeah, I was just going to say thank you. Ancestor Energy's jazz
poetry. Oh, sure. I remember them.
For years, yeah. And we occasionally do something. But, you know, that's kind of where my mind goes because mm-hmm. that's where it all started.
Yeah, I mean, it
really made created models for rap and hip-hop and that kind of thing. I mean, it is a extension of spoken word.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, the thing that I appreciate is rhyming.
Mm.
You know, like I'm a word guy. I'm a writer, editor. And when I write poetry, I like it to rhyme.
Okay.
And then, but you know, the connoisseurs of poetry these days say, well, you know, that's not only old school, it's pedantic, it's terrible, you know, he's rhyming, oh God. But really? But one thing I like about rap is it brought back rhyming.
Yeah.
Which I really enjoy because it uses the language in a fun way. And that's the way our ancestors remembered things. They put them into rhymes so that it was more, you know, mimetic, mm-hmm. mimetic, cosmetic.
Yeah. Do you memorable? Like rap, Steve?
Well, there's some that I've liked, but it's just it's kind of like I haven't quite moved into that genre as something to sit and listen to.
Yeah.
But my, you know, thankfully I had a daughter that played things, and so there's some rap that I've learned to enjoy. So I don't toss it all out. It's just that mm-hmm. as a genre, it's still kind of not my comfortable cup of tea.
Well, mm-hmm. getting back to us vintage musicians, I think one thing that I didn't like is when a rap artist would come to town with no ensemble, but yet they're performing with tracks.
Oh,
you know,
hire a real musician.
Well, wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah.
And a lot of artists in that genre absolutely have ensembles and orchestras and bands and that kind of thing. So I want to keep the musicians working.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's a good idea.
Well, that's a good note to end on. And let's see, micklabriola.com.
Yes. Thank you.
And then vannixonmusic.com. Mm-hmm. So hire these guys.
Yeah. And I just want to let people know that on the 22nd. November.
Okay.
It's a Saturday night at a restaurant called the International Cuisine. We'll have myself playing with a young woman named Cheryl Kramer, and we're going to be playing there from 7 to 9. That's at the International Cuisine on East Lake Street, 3600 East Lake Street.
Great. Okay, I really appreciate you guys. You have anything to plug, Nick?
Oh, I was just going to say that I'll be at the Mount Zion Temple for the Shabbat service this Friday, stirring up a storm. And bringing the spirit
forward.
Thank you.
Hey, if you can bring, if you can bring half as much spirit forward there as you have here today, I think you'll do an excellent job.
Okay.
So thank you, Mick Labriola, Van Nixon, and of course earlier we had Julian Manzara. I also like to thank our producer Dan Culhane and mention this is a co-production with WCCO Radio. This is Steve LeBeau, and I'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to Synapse. Think Tank of the Air. I'm Leo Espinosa.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.